John's house.
I was just going to say, if you guys wanted an extra office on Foot Street, I'm totally down with that.
So, Bob, this item will be on, it may possibly be on the agenda with our budget, if we don't mind adding that on the 23rd, because they want to deploy fairly quickly, but we need the board to be able to consider the agreement. And we just couldn't get it together in time for this meeting.
That's fine with me, having it on there, adding it to the 23rd.
And then, anyway, so there'll be much more about it as we go forward.
Thanks, Pete. Are you finished?
I think, is there anything else that I included or questions anybody has? Mm-mm. Okay, I'll mute up here.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from the directors? Additional comments, I should say. Nope. Okay. Members of the public? Jennifer? Nothing. Okay. Moving on to the operations manager's report, page 17. Hello, Louis. You're muted.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So I'll keep this brief and short. Our highlights this month were we had Presidio systems up here to clean out the main hub stations that we did last year. And so they completed the cleaning of lift station 8, 5, 6, and 7. Hopefully that will cut down on some of the odor of those main stations throughout the summertime. This year, they weren't as bad as it was last year. So that's a plus for us. I think we're just going to keep maintaining this every year moving forward. That way we don't get the poo acres that people call it. And then the other highlighted spot that I really want to focus on was our GIS program that we bought our new Trimble unit to go out and mark all of our utilities. And the guys started doing that, and they've completed unit 1 through 3 on all hydrants and hydrant valves. And they've actually sent that to CalCAD, and they've uploaded it. There's some stuff that we still got to clean up on that side of it, but they were really impressed with the work our guys did. So, and how fast they moved through some of that sections, but the guys really took that and ran with it. So it's a really good unit, and I'm just glad they're actually getting the exact locations of all these things marked down, and it's going to make our life a lot easier. So other than that, I'm going to chime in on what Travis talked about, the Jones Hill fuel break. If any of you are driving past a country club and you look up past our district property here, you can see what they have done. I've driven up to behind our plant here and looked at it, but the other day I was over there by Oak Grove Circle, and you could look back and actually see how much is completed from a view away from this place. And it's pretty amazing. It's actually, they're doing a great job. So they're kind of on hold now, and they probably won't come back in until next during the springtime or the fall or yeah. But other than that, that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Louie. Yep. I love the pictures that we have.
We had entire month with no line breaks.
Yeah.
Yes, we made up for it starting the first of this month, so we're good.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
We're only on the ninth.
Yeah, we've already got, I think, 3 this month, so we're good.
Oh, wow. Okay, any other director comments? Woo. Mr. Campa.
Oh.
Sharing now.
You're muted, Pete.
Muted, Pete.
Pete, you're muted.
All right, here we go. Now I know. I got it. I've got 3 screens, and it gets a little confusing. This is the internet view that we have of the. And my eyes are going all over the place because my mouse is
saying, I went in there.
So basically, each one of these points where we've got an X and a pink X and the circle, those are verified locations with our GPS unit, exact locations of fire hydrants and fire hydrant valves. And so we're doing that throughout. So you can see this location here is an exact location. This is where our prior files showed that hydrant. And so ultimately, the hydrant is going to show up looking like this. And these will be deleted. So anyway, it's really exciting to have all this available to be able to help the crews in the field and provide mapping to the fire department and everything else, and share it with the county. So I'm going to stop sharing that and back to normal. Thank you.
That was cool. Very cool.
That one looked like it was 100 feet off. Is that typical? I mean, are we seeing that many of these things are not where we thought they were?
Am I still muted or can you hear me? I'm sorry.
I can hear you.
You're good.
Okay, good. Basically, Bob, the other digital display, the existing files that we have are copied images of the drawings, and when that's translated into a digital image, they don't work out really well. You can see that the alignment of some of the water mains are off and everything else. But now, since we've got the fire hydrants located, and the main locations then can be pulled into alignment so that they're right on. It's not unusual to have it displayed digitally in a different location until it's verified in the field.
Well, that'll be a big help. I'm glad we moved forward on that one. Okay. Thank you, Louie.
Welcome.
Okay, moving on to the Administrative Service Manager's report. Jennifer.
So really busy time right now in admin. A lot of what we work on is what is reflected in these on these board agendas. So obviously what's been extremely time consuming is getting this budget prepared for the upcoming fiscal year. We've spent a lot of work back and forth between myself, Debbie, Pete, Louie, Greg, and Adam. To try to put together a pretty comprehensive, usable budget that projects what we believe as close to actual for the next upcoming fiscal year is. We are also preparing the tax roll documents for the upcoming tax roll that we will be placing on next month's agenda. Cross training continues in admin. Renee continues to cross train in utility billing, and this is the first time. So one of the other things that we're working on, obviously the rate increase is on the agenda, but there's a lot of background that happens with that in admin. So changing all of the rates in the Springbrook system to get prepared for the new billing rates. There's notices that we put together that get inserted into customers' billing. So that's kind of the gist of administrative business right now.
Thank you. Can I ask real quick how all the branches of this tree are working with people working from home?
What do you mean specifically?
Well, just that everything seems to be going really smoothly as far as view of things, working well for everyone that's involved.
Yes, we have really honed in on this whole process of remote working and the communication between the Debbie and Megan who are in the office and with each other. A lot of us will have scattered, we've started to scatter back into the office a little bit. So Rachel going one day, and then Renee, and then I've been in the office pretty frequently the last couple of weeks. It's going really smooth. Rachel and Renee are thriving. You know, a lot of us, it's kind of interesting when you don't have as many, you get a lot of distractions when you're in the office. You get a lot of people that come in and a lot of things that just really take away from your work and working remotely. We don't have that anymore. And we've actually really been able to focus and strategically plan what we're doing as far as, you know, tasks that we want to get accomplished. And it seems like that's working out really well, because a lot of times we'll be working on, you know, 15 different things at once, and then things kind of fall on the back burner. And what this has really forced us to prioritize what's realistic to get done and focus on that task specifically and accomplish it, and then plan for the next and move on. So we haven't, you know, as far as customer service goes, a lot of everybody's, you know, they've had to adjust because of the new norm everywhere. So it's been no different with the district. And luckily we have available the means for people to do so with online web payments and auto pay and so on and so forth. And and even, you know, field guys, like when Louie and I, Pete and Louie and I, we have our weekly Monday management meeting, which has been really nice. So that's kind of, we've been able to reestablish that so we can get together and kind of get feelers for the rest of the departments and what's going on with the district. It's getting better and better the more we get kind of get into the groove and get used to it. And unless anybody has anything other to say, I've gotten really positive feedback.
I'm really glad to hear.
Janice, is your management meeting with Pete and Jen and Louie, is that a Zoom meeting also?
Oh, that's just Louie and Pete and I, Spence.
Do you do it on Zoom?
We do it on our Teams.
Okay, that's good. All right, thank you.
Yeah, we got to see each other's face. It's pretty fun. It really is becoming a normal feel. One of the other things that I did have slated for the agenda that threw this packet way late this week, I'm sorry, or last week, is the putting together a reopening plan for the office. And the reason I say reopening plan is because, we want to provide some means to get employees back into the office, as well as to be able to have customers come in. We've got some unique challenges with our office building and the way that it's configured, and the difficulty in maintaining any type of social distancing in that front section and in the customer service area. And the reason that it's difficult is the reason that it's a concern is because there is a there's a trend going on within the special district community and concerns related to putting both employees and or customers and or renters of our facilities or anything in harm's way, a perceived harm's way, in not providing them the ability to separate, not being able to adequately disinfect each and every time somebody touches something or enters an area. There's some real challenges, and these are being worked through every single day. So I'm not going to belabor it because it's not on the agenda, but it will be an action item. I don't know whether we want to pack the agenda on the 23rd or whether we want to just do it on our next meeting, but we will be opening the customer service area. We're going to need some office renovations. I don't know, board meetings, we're going to continue for a couple months the way that we are, just because there's no way to guarantee that we can maintain distancing in that boardroom with the board and open to the public, and it has to be one way or the other. So we've just got some challenges with our boardroom, our customer service area, and our front office. We're going to continue to have some people work from home at this point to, and maybe for the long term.
Thank you.
Do you have any, as long as we're on the topic, is there, so right now we're able to have these meetings like we're having right now, mm-hmm. now because of the governor's proclamation or executive order, whatever the proper term for it is. At some point that's going to expire. Do you have any feeling at all for how much longer we can? I mean, I'm fine with Zoom meetings, but do you have any idea? I mean, if they suddenly say, okay, that's not applicable anymore, then we have to go back to
Bob, you're...
You dropped out of
talking. I'm sorry. Did you...
I think I caught everything that you said. The
I'm just curious as to what, if you have any feeling at all from CSDA, for example, as to how long Governor Newsom is likely to keep this enabling legislation in place.
I don't have any guess other than it's highly likely that it'll be a good solid month longer. I don't think they're going to rush into saying we're done. But even if it does change, and they do release that executive order and the conditions we have now, we're going to have specific circumstances that we can't overcome. We're not going to be, if they mandate, our facilities to be capable of social distancing and disinfection and blah, 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 for our board meetings, it's going to be extremely difficult unless we do it out in the parking lot. And that doesn't, so this is, I think that even if it went back to normal, Bob, we would just post an agenda if board members were going to participate from home, board members could participate in the room and we could leave it open to the public by a Zoom meeting, as the county does. That seems to be pretty functional as well. So I'll lay out some options in this report. And my recommendation is that we continue the way that we are for now. When the executive order is lifted, we're going to continue to try to find some leeway in legislation. It's a good point. I'm going to bring it up with CSDA now to see if we can get started on something proactive that sticks around. Mm-hmm. Because it's a changed world now in that regard.
Yes. Nancy, you're muted.
Pete mentioned he and Jennifer and Louie meeting on Teams. I'd like to do a little shout out for Rachel giving me like the Teams 101 mm-hmm. tutorial training on that, because I had no idea what to do with it. So it's actually kind of cool. Thanks, Jennifer. Thanks, Rachel. Did I say Jennifer the first time?
No, you said Rachel.
Okay, good. All of a sudden I look and, there's Jennifer's name and it's like, it was Rachel. Yeah. It was all Rachel.
It was fun. I'll contact you about the training because I have no bloody idea what to do with that.
You just log in, that's all.
I'll help you, Bob. It'll be fun.
Rachel's a good teacher.
Yeah, I could stand some training in team as well. If you want to put me on the list.
You just have to have a Zoom meeting on using Teams.
Yep. I'll schedule it. We'll figure it out.
Good. That's a great idea. Okay. Thank you, everybody. That was a good chat.
If I may, Janice?
Yes, please, Spencer. Yes.
One of the other directors said they don't mind doing these Zoom meetings. I'm fine with Zoom meetings. I, too, am fine with Zoom meetings. If we want to, schedule Zoom meetings, regular meetings, however you come up with a plan, Pete, is fine. But Zoom meetings don't bother me a bit. They really don't. So I just want to let people know that. I don't know if some people want to get back in the little office in the boardroom there and have another meeting. That's fine. But Zoom meetings are cool, too. Enough on that.
Okay. Okay. We're going to move on to Jennifer. Did you have anything else to add to your? It's been a long time since you spoke.
No, okay. I'll be speaking more throughout the meeting. So.
Okay, we're going to move on to the consent calendar now. And does anybody have any? Make a motion. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the consent calendar as is.
Yeah, I have two questions. Pretty quick.
Can we?
The first one. I'll second it. I just want to clarify a couple of things.
Okay. Now we'll take board member comments, questions. Yes, Bob.
Yeah. So the IT contract with Aqua Sierra is that $18,000? Is that a month? Or is that a quarter or what? I mean, how big is our contract with these guys?
They bill us hourly, and I don't know specifically Louis May, because he's the one who's working really closely with Steve, as far as if that's equipment built into that at all, Lou, or if that's just the hourly.
The AquaSphere does a lot for us, though, so it's not just their contract that they work that we get billed for. It's flow meter calibration, flow meter installation, troubleshooting of certain equipment. So on the actual contract itself, I would have to look at that. But I believe that bill comes in as about $1,500 a month for him to get into our server and back up everything and make sure everything's current. But I could follow up with Deb right now on that if need be.
Okay, I mean, this may be one of the ones where IT services was just the last thing on the entry, but it is $18,000. That's, you know, plus there was another repair and whatnot of comms for another $6,500. If it's really a lot of other stuff, then that's more understandable, but that's quite a lot of money if it's just IT services and communications.
Gotcha. I'll check on that. I'm right here. I can make it happen.
Okay. My other question is, what is a sludge judge?
Good question.
Since Greg is not on, I will let you know. It's actually a pipe that they dip down into our clarifier to find out our sludge blanket in the bottom of that. And that determines how much they remove with RAS. And so all it does, it has like a little plunger on the bottom. When you drop it in there, it fills up, and when you pull back, it holds it, and so they can actually see the level of the blanket in the clarifier.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, do we have any other comments, questions? Okay, Jennifer, do we have any public comments, questions?
No.
Okay. Looks like we will take a vote at this time.
Okay. It's been moved by Director Gretkowski, seconded by Director Swan to approve the consent calendar. Director Gretkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries to approve the consent calendar with 4 in favor and Director Armstrong absent.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 5, old business. Page 34 of the packet, item A, review of draft fiscal year 2020-2021 budget, provide direction to staff and establish a public hearing date of June 23rd, 2020 for an adoption of the final budget.
Okay, we continue to make a number of improvements to the budget, improvements from readability and just the way that it's laid out so that it's easier for the reader to understand, because we basically have 4 budgets and 1. Plus the administrative budget. So it can be really confusing to people who take a look at it from the outside. So starting with the And I'm going to move my screen a little bit here. Don't get dizzy. Starting with the sheets that are the narrative that is the narrative that you've seen before. We're going to round that out with the sections that are incomplete. There'll be some budget highlights. There'll be more specific description about the items in the budget, descriptions of capital projects and different things, so that you have all of that information upcoming for the hearing. But if you have any questions about any of the items on this or any projects or anything else, don't hesitate to ask. One of the main things that we did on the district-wide sheet, which is where you have a summary of each of the funds, each of the water, sewer, fire, and park funds, and you also have an administrative budget summary. All of the expenses, the budgeted amount, the projected fiscal year end, and the proposed are summarized in that sheet. So this sheet pulls from all of the other detailed sheets and shows them in a single location. So basically, when you're looking at the revenue lines, when you're looking at the operating expenses, that is pulling the subtotals from those other sheets. Okay, so when you're looking, if you spend time looking at this district-wide sheet, if you need to look at why something may have changed, you go to that subtotal line in that budget, either the water, sewer, fire, park, in the detail sheets, and you can find it. Administrative allocation, one fairly substantial change is the proposed shift of some of the percentage of the administrative cost to fire and less to park. We have found over time that we've got quite a bit of additional work that we're going to be doing in the fire department services with the master plan this year, implementing the master plan, refining the way that the calls are logged and understanding that information, dealing with projects that are coming up outside of the district boundaries and being engaged in those processes as it relates to fire and emergency services, planning countywide for funding for fire services, hopefully implementing a revenue measure as quickly as we can to keep the fire department whole, and then start to replace some apparatus that we know is going to be worn out fairly soon. Okay, so that is going to take a significant amount of effort over the next 5 years. So that is the major change that's proposed on the way that we allocate the administrative expense. Another major change in the way that this is laid out on the district-wide is that, for example, when you look at the first page, which is district-wide water, you can see down when you get to the capital project line that we are proposing a capital revenue inflow of $3,400,000. Okay, that is grant reimbursements, and we're estimating it to occur in this upcoming fiscal year. At this point, it's possible weather, contracting, other things, it could extend to next fiscal year, but we're going to make the assumption that we are able to complete the project and receive the reimbursements in this year. So the capital outlay expenditures of $3,928,400 reflects the Clearwells project that is on your agenda later today, and the cost associated with that, and then this grant funds offsets that. So The bottom line is the net capital expenses that have to come out of the operating budget are $528,400. So hopefully that makes sense. The same goes when we go to the sewer fund, but that is where we show that the net effect to the water budget is we're investing over $500,000 of ratepayer money into the infrastructure in addition to the grant funded work. So it's a huge chunk of money. It's everything that we had anticipated back in 2016 that we were going to put into a reserve fund for infrastructure is going into improvements this year, planned improvements. And then, are there any questions on the district-wide water summary at this point?
No, I don't have any. Yes, Spencer.
Yeah, that's nowhere. Is there any mention of the block grant through Tuolumne County coming to us? That's not even in the budget yet because we haven't received the money.
Right.
And that won't even go on to paper until we start getting something for that. Is that correct?
We'll do a budget amendment. We'll also do a budget amendment if we are successful in the contract for the sewer project.
Right. Okay. Thank you, sir.
There is one thing though that just to let you know, the county of Tuolumne has asked for us to submit an invoice to them for $18,000 for the generator funding that the county got. If you'll remember, we went to the county and three districts, TUD, Twain Hart, and GCSD asked for money, and the county board approved that money. So the county is purchasing some generators for their purposes, and they're having the districts each bill $18,000 to the county. So we'll get that money this year, this fiscal year. So it doesn't show up in any projected revenue or expenses, but we are going to need to add that generator project to the capital budget. So, so Louis, we'll need to get that for the final version in here. And that generator is at the, I think that's tank two, if I'm not mistaken.
Tank four,
that's the one. You remember, I don't remember numbers.
And I got the quote back, so we can talk about that afterwards.
Okay, good deal. And then it also, Spencer, does not reflect the DWR IRWIMP money for the generators. So we could have a pretty sizable budget amendment or series of budget amendments that show offsetting revenue and expenses. Okay. So we're looking forward to those amendments.
Thank you. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah. So I'll move on to the second page, district-wide sewer, same thing. I'll focus on the big money. First off, as you know, the rate, the last 17% rate increase is proposed, not the last increase ever, but the last of the larger increases. And that's reflected in the amount of revenue. The expenses are remaining fairly consistent with last year. I'd have to get into a little bit of detail to answer my own question right there, but I just want to take your attention to the center of the screen with the capital expenses and revenue for sewer. Also, the capital revenue, the $1.5 million in loan that we received is shown there. So that is basically, it's an addition to our cash. And that is what we're using to complete $1.5 million worth of wastewater plant improvements this year. I mean, that's huge.
Wow. Yeah.
We took on that loan. We got a really, really good rate with it. And because there are improvements that we couldn't wait on other sources of grant funding. As you remember, when we apply for a grant, it can take 2 years or more. 4 years to be able to get a notification. And that is unacceptable in some of the projects that need to happen right away. So we did take on the loan to do that work. So that reduces the additional amount that we're taking out of our cash flow to $443,750. And that comes directly out of the rate money that we charge customers. And it's consistent with what we wanted to do, about $500,000 of improvements each year. Improvements, I call them improvements. Many of them are replacements. You know, it's equipment, tools, anything that's over the $5,000 and has a longer life expectancy. Jennifer, I don't mean to put you on the spot, and I can jump to the section of the budget, but when you look at the other expenses in sewer, there's a fairly sizable increase there. Was that, do you remember what makes that up?
I'm sorry, can you,
the equipment auto maintenance repairs line jumped quite a bit.
That's 30,000.
Yeah, and then the 340, the 150,000 or almost 200,000 for the other, including OPEB, leases, costs, and water.
OPEB, I have to look at the detail sheet. Give me a moment.
Sewer, yeah, that's quite a jump.
We have... something... It's not, there has to be a calculation error there, because the other on the sewer expense sheet is $241,684 from $219,420 from this fiscal year. There's a 10,000, so there, I don't know, I have to check the cell reference there of why that's not pulling, or why that's pulling in that number. But it looks like, but the difference in the other, just for, since we're discussing it right now, there's a $10,000 for the INI study, and just an increase of $5,000 in chemicals odor control for the odor grease control for the new, it's just new product price increases. And then we also have added $7,200 for the annual subscription cost to Calcat and Cartograph for the memberships. So I'll have to see why that three.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to throw that out there.
No, that's fine. No, that's what we need to see those, because
it came at me as soon as I.
Well, that tends to happen when we're looking at these sheets for, you know, hours on end. You go a little cross-eyed for a while, so you don't see these things. I'm making a note of it. I'll figure out where that number's pulling from.
Such a beautiful sound. Okay.
Did everybody get that though? That the other total other should be $241,684.
Okay, so make that. Not the 347. 241. Thank you.
Okay, so I will. We'll make sure that we get that dialed in. Sorry, I'm chasing my mouse. It's truly is chasing a mouse. I'm telling you, when you have three screens, I don't know which way it's going to go from 1 minute to the next. Okay, so about that.
Just before we get off of that, I'm sorry. Because in the other, it's not, I know that we actually included more than that one other category. So, sorry, I'm having to go through a lot of different pages right now.
Jen, why don't you focus on that for a second? I can move.
That's fine. Go ahead and move on.
I'm just going to move on to the, I want to clarify, when you look at the top of each of these sheets in the district-wide summary, you've got a beginning cash balance. Last year, we called it a fund balance. In true accounting terms, that's not the correct statement. We were corrected this year and want to make sure that it's that that it's clear that we're talking about cash available, accessible in the bank and in our investment account through LAIF. So in other words, this is money that we have to be able to balance the budget and to deal with contingencies. And because there are highs and lows with budgets. And so you'll see that we didn't really budget a beginning cash balance. That is an estimated actual cash balance taken from financial records. We project, for example, for sewer at the end of this fiscal year, it looks like we'll have $866,495 of cash available. And then when we finish this fiscal year, once we make the corrections to this, if you look at the ending cash balance, if we spend everything, we had budgeted to have $173,723 in cash available, but in reality, we had $866,495, and we're looking to increase cash balance again this year. At the end of the year projected. So we should start this next fiscal year with a little over $1 million, almost $1.1 million in cash available. And then you can see the bottom, I want to call it pink, where you balance revenue and expenses for the year. Basically, we will balance the budget by taking $185,802 out of that cash and leaving a balance of $865,175. So the important column, obviously, is the proposed cash at the beginning of the year up at the top, and then the $185,000 negative. And that's basically because we're spending more on projects than we have in cash flow. And at some point, you've got to balance that out either through rate increases or less projects because your operating expenses, there's not a lot you can do with the operating expenses.
Pete, I'm just going to interject for a moment. So I found what it is. The what's included in that other is the new loan expense that we have for the sewer improvement loan for principal and interest is $105,838, which we didn't have the previous fiscal year. That dollars be included in that total other expense line.
Okay.
It's a totally new category.
And what was the dollar amount?
It's the loan is $105,838. That's being added to the $241, which is giving us that number.
Okay.
It is an accurate number. It's just that loan expense is a new, that's where we captured that expense at.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we, in the description of that item then on the left, can we add in parentheses, OPEB, loans, leases? I guess, leases kind of says it, but.
Shouldn't that go under debt service?
It's not like I think we kind of threw this back and forth. Our debt service is specific to the bonds, and this isn't, it's a loan. It's not like a I mean, it's obviously a debt.
It's a debt.
Yeah.
Well, they're all debts.
It's a debt.
Look, I think for clarity, I think that's probably a good point, Jen, to it shows separately on the expense budget, but we could drop it in here into the debt service down toward the bottom.
Okay.
You could have two lines in the debt service, one for bonds and one for the loan. But I mean, it is a loan. It's debt service.
Yeah, I just, because we don't, I think we kind of talked about this before, was just because we got to show the revenue coming in and the revenue, because it was making it look upside down because we were just showing the expense and not, because we have separate accounts for the bonds that have their own, we'll figure it out though. I know, like you're saying, we'll just treat it differently with an explanation.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to move then on to the fire, and if you want to focus your eyes on the administrative allocation, which is toward the bottom of the green, this is the where the amount of the percentage was changed from 1% to 5%.
Wow.
So that occurs in the administrative allocation. And so that's an appropriate number there. Basically, it does double the allocation. I mean, it actually go, you know, from 1 to 5%, it is more than double, but it's the amount
accurate.
It's accurate based on the level of effort. Again, the administrative allocation is at our discretion. It has to be allocated in some way. Mm-hmm. And some districts do detailed studies. And I've even seen some districts spend a bunch of money to do a study and then not implement the results of it because it didn't make sense. But I think it's going based on level of effort and number of customers, and a hybrid like that has worked out well. We have cost estimates from Cal Fire about the Schedule A contract and the amateur contract cost for the year. Those are included in there. The revenue is projected in there at a 2% increase. We do have other revenue. I'm going to ask that, and I'm sorry, I'm just, this, when you're buried in this budget all the time, sometimes you don't see it until you put it down for 4 days. Just as we did with the water and sewer fund in this other revenue line, I'm going to suggest that we move the grant money down here to capital revenue, because we've got the fuel break project in here. And then it's offset by the grant that we're receiving. So anyway, I'm running myself in circles. You ever get tired of budgets?
Uh-huh.
I'd like to be able to explain it more simply, but I know that it's in there, but it's not an other revenue that we can count on. It's a grant revenue that we will receive from the state. And I believe that is reflected in that other revenue line item. So I'm going to move on to park, unless there's any question at this point about fire.
Excuse me, I have one question going back to, I just want to make sure I understand something on the sewer depth service.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was trying to interject before, but I think I was on the wrong screen, so it wasn't happening. The reason we had the big pop at the end of this year, why we have a much larger allocation out, debt service out than revenue, that's because of the pay ahead we did, right? To shorten the maturity date.
Oh yeah, the rewritten loans on the bonds.
Right. I just want to make sure that's what that pop is. Why the 400,000 and change of because we basically paid the last installment ahead, right? Something like that.
Peter,
I'm looking at it.
The
questions are for whatever reason hard to identify on the fly. I'd have to cross reference the detail sheet there.
Just seems like in the explication portion of the budget memo that you should probably mention that, because otherwise it's kind of a big sore thumb standing out there. There is, I'm pretty sure the explanation is simple, but don't forget to say something about it.
Are you talking about the projected year end for this year?
Yes.
The difference between the budget amount 323,910 and 494,990. Okay. Yes, I'll explain it. So are we prepared to move on with the with parks again? No major change here from the last time you saw it. We haven't included any of the state funded projects. They've basically got the state grants through the Department of Parks on hold. I assume they're going to release it, but again, we'll try to include this with a budget amendment spend the per capita allocation, or if we apply for anything else and receive that. That will be reflected in a budget amendment, but this is basically just covering operations and some relatively minor improvements.
We're talking about parks, right?
Parks, yes.
Okay.
And again, we're actually in a better situation than I thought. When it comes to the cash for parks, not that that's something to celebrate, because we're really not going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
But the total expenses and the total revenue are pretty much about balancing at this point. And we hope that we'll be able to come up with a different way to fund the parks, as far as to have more money into it, so that we can actually do capital equipment replacement and all that. So this is pretty much where we are at this point. And then from here, after this, we've got the admin budget. That basically, again, this is the summarized version, and then this amount is split out between the services, with water paying the majority, sewer paying over a third of it, and then park and fire paying the remainder. I don't have any focus points really on this one, unless anybody has any questions. I'll just entertain questions from the board.
I don't see any hands raised. I just noticed real quickly the medical plan change has gone down. Mm-hmm. Is that because we have, why?
That's because we kind of did a hybrid type of plan, mm-hmm. where the deductible is higher, which makes the premium lower. Mm-hmm. And it's where it's a Blue Cross plan. At the same time, it's like a district funded plan. It's like the district works as kind of the secondary insurance. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, the staff has a maximum out of pocket that they will experience. And then if anything above that, the district would pick up, and it's kind of like, I don't want to say, it's kind of like gambling, but it's a way to keep it affordable because of the fact that we have such a young staff, mm-hmm. That, you know, there's not a whole lot of utilization of the plans. And so by having a plan that's structured this way, it keeps the district, it keeps us, the word term I'm looking for, like for employer people coming in to retain them, it makes us look very attractive because mm-hmm. the out of pocket is less to employees than it was significantly higher with the plan, and it with the, I don't know if I'm Pete, you can help jump in here, it's kind of It's due to the fact that the deductibles are higher for employees and the max out of pocket is higher for employees, which makes the premium less. So the overall cost of the district, as long as they're not having to pick up any of the employees parts of it, stay very low, which keeps the cost down low for everybody. The district does have the exposure. Let's say if everybody had, you know, gotten sick and everybody was maxing out on their deductibles, the district would pick that up. But that hasn't been the case. And even with the plan so far implemented, it hasn't been that way. Okay. If anybody there's clarifying questions. If you have questions, I can maybe clarify my explanation of this plan.
I think you explained it very well.
Oh, thank you. I didn't feel that way, but okay.
basically we're assuming more of the risk if there is a serious expense.
Right, but the risk is low.
In exchange for which the premium is lower.
Correct.
If everything is good. So it's kind of like gambling, but that's insurance. I mean, that's basically all insurance.
Yeah, and so, and what mm-hmm. another, the thought behind this as well was that with a plan like this, with whatever we come in under budget, which is hopefully, you know, what we're doing, we would like to set aside into a reserve. So in the event that we do have those years where maybe something like this happens, we take that excess money that we've accumulated to buffer in the event of that, if mm-hmm. you've seen that exposure.
Right. It's a certain amount of self-insurance, which is, you know, that if, assuming we can get through the first couple of years and build up a little bit of a fund, a reserve.
Right.
Fund,
you know, all the
exactly.
That's a great idea. Okay. We already talked about the CalPERS and the liability and workers' comp mm-hmm. and I don't see anything else on here. Does anybody else have any other comments or questions?
I'm not seeing any.
Okay.
Okay, so.
I'm just gonna unmute just for a second here. The sure. Along the lines of what we just talked about with the medical insurance, do we want to add an expense line item for transfer to reserves for this medical insurance? Based on expected cost savings, it doesn't have to be a lot, but if we're going to build up this reserve category of some sort, we've got to have a way to account for it, which
right means. Okay, so you just want to add that to whatever are we
I'm just throwing that out there. If we had a conversation about it, we've been thinking it. It doesn't have to be a formally restricted reserve. It can just be an account. We allocate money to it so that we can see it go up and down each year. Jen, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I know that I believe it's EDIS is our secondary insurance management people. They have ways of projecting these numbers. So I could reach out to Adam Seuss to see what would be a conservative amount to plan for transfer over, and maybe especially during like maybe mid-year when we even get a better idea, we could change that. But I think that's a good idea, because if anything, it'll definitely make sure that we remember at the end of the fiscal year. One other thing I wanted to just bring attention to before we get off of this was the, because we're talking about medical, is I'm not sure if you noticed, but within the budget, I have that retired members medical line item that's in the expenses. So we know that our CERT account is fully funded for OPEB. And I know, Bob, I think you came on right when we had established this account. It was a while ago, but I need to reach out to the CERT people to understand exactly how we utilize this, because having this account fully funded means that we didn't have to pay as we go for a retired member's medical anymore. And so, because that's how it is and it's been, we just pay as we go. But now that the account is fully funded, that should be covering the cost of the OPEB expense. I just have to talk to CERT people to figure out exactly how we start utilizing that. I'm under the impression that we pay for it, and then we would probably take a one-time disbursement from our account to show as the revenue to offset what the district paid for the OPEB. So that's something that I'm looking at as well. So just for future reference, that retiree members medical line item that we see in the funds should go away, that expense.
Right. That's if I remember correctly. Yes, I was, as a matter of fact, I was the one who found SERPT, if I remember correctly. But it's an invoice. You pay the payments and then you can make a withdrawal from it. It's pretty straightforward. At least it's supposed to be. And then it'll just show up as a negative. What doesn't show up anywhere on ours, because the OPEB balance doesn't really show anywhere on our financials, does it?
No.
So it's just, it shows up as when we do the actuarial thing and at the end of the year where we're covering the OPEB. I don't know that actually shows, might show up at the audited financials you just draw down from the account to cover your expenses.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking for ease, if it's a one-time distribution before the end of the fiscal year, rather than, well, I'll have to figure out the logistics. I haven't been able to reach out to CERT yet to see what is what is common.
They may have changed, but my recollection was you would just send like a quarterly invoice. You just show your expenses or some period of time. I don't think it's only just once a year.
Okay.
I have a quick question on the medical, the additional money that we're going to set aside. Mm-hmm. Does the medical plan cover things that we would not necessarily want to pay above and beyond the employees? Like if someone needed what would be an example? Like if someone needed trouble having a baby and they wanted to get all the, go through the whole, $20,000 expense for that medical procedure, and their deductible's $1,000, are we going to pay $19,000 to
no.
cover the, Okay. I don't know what the plan covers.
The districts, well, the plan covers a lot, pretty much everything. What the district's responsible was for the max out of pocket. So every, you know, insurance plan, you have like the max out of pocket, regardless of whatever. And that's what the districts would be the most the district would be liable for, is the max out of pocket.
I would assume that the way it's structured is that it would have to be a approved insurance reimbursement before we'd be on the hook for it. I mean, if it was just something completely that was not covered by the insurance in the first place, that then it's not a deductible because
it's not covered.
I would also think it would depend on if it's like an elective type of thing.
Right.
I don't know if like IVF is considered elective or not. It is in my head, but I would imagine that would play into it.
Well, I know a lot of plans cover a lot of things that people would think is elective, but aren't, but isn't, you know, so I was just curious.
I'm just guessing. I mean, you can check on this, but I mean, insurance, there's things that are covered and there's things that are not covered. The things that are not covered don't even enter into the insurance. I mean, there's nobody,
exactly.
Nothing gets paid. Right. So I would assume that if it was not covered by the policy that we would not be on the hook for.
I'm not talking about not covered items. I'm talking about things that we are, that the employees are insured for.
Yeah, it's all, everything's subject to the deduct, everything's subject to your deductible and then your max out of pocket. There is no, if somebody gets in, you know, let's say, I don't know, has to have some procedure that ends up costing $5 million, the district's only responsible for the max out of pocket for that, for whatever that, their calendar year programs.
Okay.
We wouldn't be subject to anything like that.
Yeah, so usually it's $5,000 or $7,500 or something like that, correct? Okay,
correct.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you, that explains it all. Okay. So that was, this is a discussion item only, and we will move on to the regular agenda items. Action items. Does anybody need to take a break real quick? We've been doing this for an hour and a half. Nope. Okay. Item 6A. Where did 6A go? Page 70, adoption of a resolution establishing Groveland Fire Department deployment standards relating to the distribution of fire stations and response time goals, incidents including multiple unit effective response force and hazardous materials response.
Unmute, here we go. Okay. I wasn't aware that, or I didn't log in my brain that Andy was not going to be able to be at this meeting today. We have had a number of conversations throughout the preparation of the fire master plan about adoption of these standards, and Andy was in full support and felt that there was nothing within them that gave him any heartache. Again, it's in fact, he felt that it was a very positive thing to do. It is a target. It is something that we want to have as a standard when we start talking about funding needed for the fire department, when we talk about development projects, when we talk about equipment and methods and staffing and all of that, these standards come into play. So I think they're a very solid recommendation that was contained in the master plan, and we recommend their adoption approval.
Any director questions?
We lost our leader. Sure. Yeah, look at that. Oh, she's getting out of the sunshine. That's what happens with the...
I think Director Swan wants to make a comment.
Outside meeting.
You're muted, Bob.
In the shade. Okay.
All right.
Try this again. I'd like to move to adopt resolution 27-2020. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because I can't keep it on the screen at the same time that I'm able to.
And I second that motion.
Okay, do we have any director, outside comments, Jennifer?
Sorry, I've got to go to three different places. No, we do not.
I don't know if, I don't see Travis's face, but I see his iPad is still in. Yeah.
There he is.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot, man, but this is because this was something that Andy and I had worked through in quite a bit of detail. Then he's got a burn vacation. I don't understand how that worked. But these recommendations and these deployment standards pretty much reflect where we've been. They seem to be within our grasp, and it helps me be able to convey what we want to provide as a department. So I just didn't know if you had any additional thoughts or.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that absolutely they're within our grasp. And, you know, there was only a couple spots where maybe we just barely missed the mark. I think some of those are kind of like a clerical mistake. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, crew turnout time, their recommendation was 2 minutes, and ours came in at 4 minutes, 25 seconds. But there's a factor that you have to keep into account there that we might already be on the road before they check back in with us. And oftentimes we're even at scene before they've confirmed that we're in route. And so that reflex time, makes that average look worse than it really is in reality. But I know that Andy was in favor of all this as well.
Okay.
Yeah, believe me, he made it painfully clear to everyone in attendance, and that number is a little bit of an anomaly. It doesn't really mean that that's how long it takes you to put your pants on, you know?
Yeah.
It's I not being in the fire business directly, there's obviously some solid rationale for looking at that number. And I know that there is an opportunity for different procedures and different equipment, so that you're not stepping on the radio traffic, but they know, you know, whether it's GPS or whatever it is that says, okay, they've left, here it is, you know, and can put that time tick on it. But that also gives me that direction. Adopting these gives me the direction to work with you guys to square those numbers around, you know, so that we know what they are.
Yeah, there's definitely some flexibility and maybe just some small changes that we could make that will make those numbers improve. The practice in this unit is that you get dispatched to a call and you wait until they check back in with you. They call it check back, where they call your engine number and you respond that you're en route. Sometimes they get other emergency calls and they get pulled away. They don't do that check back for a number of minutes, although we have been driving to the call. So something that we've talked about possibly doing is for us to make these numbers more accurate. Instead of waiting for the check back, we'll just come up on the radio and say we're responding as soon as we leave, which will give us the exact number when we get on the road.
Perfect. So it sounds great. You guys are doing an awesome job. We kick butt, man. You guys do really good. Excuse my language.
Yeah, I think the fact that the total call to arrival time is in line with the expectation indicates that it's just an internal accounting issue. And yeah. I think the overall goals are good, and it's good to put these things on there and, you know, say this is what we're proposing to.
Right. It's been moved and seconded. If there's not any further discussion, I will call for the vote.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, so it's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Edwards to approve adopting resolution establishing Groveland Fire Department deployment standards relating to distribution of fire stations and response time goals for incidents, including multiple unit effective response force and hazardous materials response. Okay, Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
And the motion carries to adopt resolution 4 in favor with Director Armstrong absent.
Thank you. I did have Mike come and chase away some Blue Jays. It looks like they're back. Driving me nuts. Okay. Item B, page 76. A adoption of a resolution approving implementation of the previous the authorized water and sewer rate increase for the fiscal year 2021, and that is resolution 28-2020.
Okay, so it's a time of year again where the board has the opportunity to move forward with implementing the next phase of rate increases. As the resolution states, this will be the last rate increase that the board can implement as far as the water fund goes without going through another Prop 218 process, which we have on the budget that for the upcoming fiscal year to conduct a new water rate study. In addition, we have the next phase of sewer rate increase, which is the 15%. And then the subsequent ones after this are the 3%. So we have attached what the rates will be. The rates are included in the resolution as well as the chart that was given to the board. As I stated in my administrative report, staff is working on already putting these into the system with the effective date of July 1 in the event that the board does move forward with the rate increases. And we've also prepared the insert that will accompany the bills for July and notifying the customers of the new rates for the upcoming fiscal year. And obviously the financial impact is more revenue for both the water and the sewer funds to fund very important operational costs and infrastructure capital improvement projects. So Pete, if I don't know if you would like to elaborate any more on this. No? Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
No, I'll leave rate increases to you.
Oh thanks.
Nice of him to share that with you. Jennifer, can I ask that you do a calculation? I think you did it the last couple of years, a calculation of what the rates are now and what actual dollar amount the constituents are going to be having.
So Janice, we did do that in the past, but then I think we had taken it away because we had like the average, like it's on the sewer one just because that's taken directly from the Bartle Wells study to show where it is. Mm-hmm. But I think Pete didn't like us having that typical average in there because it might've confused people. So we had taken that away when we actually issued the notices to people. We can definitely change it, but I know that in the past we were directed to, we kind of got rid of that because we didn't want to be misleading for anybody. but I'm open to if we've changed our minds.
Okay. Did you guys get a lot of calls or something from constituents regarding it? Because there was always, I used that quite often because I got a lot of people that were contacting me and asking how much the rates are going to go up. And I, you know, always said it was an average, not anything specific. And if I know as also as a rate payer, it helps me to budget if I can have an idea of what my bill is going to be going up. You know, you can say 15% or 17%, but it doesn't, the whole bill doesn't go up 17%, just the use of your water. So it's, you know, it's not as easy to figure out as most people think it is. You thought it was confusing to people?
For the sewer people, it does go up 15% because the base rate goes up as well as the variable rate.
Right.
So I mean, for the sewer, it's a big hit that it is 15%. I mean, there's really, people can figure that out themselves. It's like a tip.
Well, it does show, Janice, like on it, you know, the flat rate is very, because this is what the flat rate is now. This is what the flat rate's going to go to. So that's $1.16 that they can, that's pretty easy for them to say, well, your flat rate's going from this to this. That's clear on the rate sheet that we give out. It's the variable. And it just depends, because it's on water, it gets confusing because you've got the first, you've got the base rate, and then you've got the peak usage rate that kicks in. And it just, the variable rate seemed to confuse people, and they thought, well, this is what, so I get 4,000 gallons at this amount. I think that's why we ended up doing away with it. And what we do is when people call or they'll question, we always open up their account and we'll look at their average consumption and we'll work out the calculations for them.
Okay. That's fine. And back to the sewer rate, it's not 15% of their bill. It's 15% of their monthly fixed charge. So a lot of people were saying, oh, my bill's already $140 for sewer, but the debt rate doesn't increase 15%.
No, so the 15% is on the flat rate or the fixed charge in addition to the variable rate. So the variable rate also goes up by 15%.
Okay.
But it's not on top of it. It's variable based on whatever their consumption is.
Right.
Yes, you're right. It is a little bit less than 15% because the debt service doesn't change, but it's still pretty
close. Yeah. Okay. Well, we know how that works with the constituents. Anything is a concern to them. Budget-wise, it should be.
The poor sewer users, I mean, it's really expensive.
Absolutely.
That's one I can no longer say that I've never had a single one of the people on sewer, or you know, which is pretty much everybody out here in Unit 12, complain about it until just recently. The guy, I think it was the guy who's working on Leo's plane, so he kind of was complaining about it, not even really realizing I was on the board. I thought for sure he was doing it because I was on the board. So I told him, oh, great, now you broke that. I can no longer say no one has ever complained.
Darn it. Okay.
Join the club.
Jennifer, will you remind me, what is the peak demand usage? When is peak?
The peak demand usage is things over, it's 3,300 gallons, Rachel? Yeah. It's 3,300 gallons, which is based off like a single family resident unit. Is it AWA? There's some stand, you know, using 50 or 55 gallons a day, Pete?
Yes.
Okay. That's what, so once you go over the 3,300 gallons, so all gallons up to 3,300 are billed at the base. And then once you go, so the gallon that starts over 3,300, which is not all of, some people get confused and they think that if they go over, then all of those gallons are charged at the peak rate. It's just the first 3,300 are charged at the base. Anything above the 3,300 is charged at the peak. And the reasoning behind that's contained in the engineer report is because if all of our constituents just stayed at that base rate usage, we would only need to operate one water treatment plant. But because of the fact that people don't stay at that, was the need for the secondary water treatment plant to meet the demand. So that peak demand usage rate is for the expense of needing to operate our second treatment plant facility to meet demands.
So it's like a tier.
Yeah, but we don't use
all the usage in that tier is at this rate, and this usage above that is at this different rate.
Yeah, we caution against tiers though, because it's been contested and challenged in the past, because a lot of districts, and even the district before this water rate study, used to have, like, I want to say it was like four tiers, and they were just, well, you know, they increased by some amount that wasn't tied to anything, and Prop 218 by law requires that you can't just unilaterally apply a rate. It has to be specific to operating costs.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. So that's why it's structured this way. That's why I provided that explanation that it's it is a second tier, but it's based off of the fact, it's based off of real true operating expense.
Unlike PG&E.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. That's a good example. Thank you very much. Okay. So do we have any members of the public like to say anything on this item?
I think Bob would like to speak.
Well, I was just going to say, the tier, we used to have four tiers, and the last time we went around, we had to come up with a justification for having any tier, any change at all, because really, a lot of places use it because they have alternative water sources and they get to charge different amounts for different kinds of water mm-hmm. sources. The best we could come up with was the fact that we've got two treatment plants. So mm-hmm. that's why.
Okay, thank you. Now we will call for a vote. I'm sorry, Jennifer, were there any other comments?
Actually, I'd like to move to adopt Resolution 28-2020. Resolution of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District approving implementation of the previously authorized water and sewer rate increases for fiscal year 2021.
I'll second that.
Okay, and no, Janice, I do not see any public comment. So
okay.
It has
the vote.
Moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Kwiatkowski, to approve adopting Resolution 28-2020, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Groveland Community Services District approving implementation of the previously authorized water and sewer rate increase for the fiscal year 2021. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
And the motion carries with 4 in favor and Director Armstrong absent.
Okay, moving on to item C, adoption of a resolution approving the Big Creek Second Grody Clearwell Project and authorize the general manager to proceed with the public bidding, and this is Resolution 30-2020.
On mute, here we go. Okay, this, I think that this will be a relatively painless item. As a matter of practice and under the uniform, or the, not the uniform construction cost accounting, but under the public contract code, the board is the party to approve a project. And so that is why you're being asked to adopt a resolution that approves the project. And basically, you leave the development of plans and specifications to the professional engineer. And that is Alfonso Manrique with AMCE Engineers. They did the plans and specifications. We actually received those over the weekend and revised version yesterday. So those are on file and ready to go out to bid. And as you remember, the bid process is very formal. It is sent out to the plan centers, and there's a very strict process that you have to follow to get information out to bidders so that everybody's given the same exact information when they bid the project, because we are required by law to award to the lowest responsible, responsive bidder. There's no option for us to say, gosh, we don't like that contractor, the low bidder, we can go to the next one. That no matter how much you don't like them, you still have to award the contract to them as long as they meet your qualifications that you've spelled out. And the project, you can see that there's a staff memo in there from Alfonso that talks a little bit about the project. You can see some of the photos that were taken inside that tank. It, to me, it is, it's pretty scary. Some of the just rust, you know, and minor coating things are not as much of a concern, but when you see big sections of it peeling off, that tells me that in all reality, the coating was improperly installed to begin with. And that typically what happens is if you don't have a solid inspector out there, if you don't spend the money to have the right technician out inspecting the thicknesses, not only the thicknesses, but the cleanliness of the material when it goes on, the pressure that it's applied, the thickness that it's applied, the temperature of the metal, verifying exactly the product meets your specifications. It's a very, very technical, very serious matter, because you can see it's a very expensive process to basically repaint these tanks. Also,
$1 million.
You can see that when you look at the structure up on the top, there's a significant amount of rust. That's going to be a lot of work. And we've got a pretty healthy contingency in the budget. And it's possible that some of those members may have to be either replaced or repaired on site. And that's a lot of work. And we certainly don't want, this is deferred maintenance as well. This should have been done a long time ago. This has obviously been in place in this kind of condition for a lot of years. But hopefully this coating that we put on this time will be done properly, and that it'll give us a standard life of, you know, a good 15, 20 years or more, and not have this type of problem. So the last item is the budget. There is a contingency amount in there of $294,000. There's also engineering, construction management, and inspection of $611,000. Those costs, you know, this is not a firm budget at this point until we receive the bids and we award the contract. Then we can actually adopt a budget for the project that we can get more exact on. And then, you know, just understanding that this is one thing that was added to this is item number four, the Butler Way booster pump station at $275,000. That was initially not part of the project, but when we talked through it, in order to be able to keep consistent water supply while one of the plants is down, we need to rebuild that pump station. we are going to need to go through some environmental review on that, because that station exists currently underground and we will be putting a structure out there. So we'll probably need to do an initial study. The process of getting through that environmental review could be a couple of months. I hope it doesn't delay the the issuance of the construction contract, but anyway, this is ready to go.
Pursuant to your remarks about the difficulty of the project, I just want to mention that as best as I recall, Big Creek was recoded, I think maybe a year or two before I joined the board. And then within a year after I joined the board, we had one of the inspections revealed that the coating was already failing. So getting the right contractor, even though you have to select the most responsive one, is still pretty critical because, you know, that was not that long ago and it didn't last very long at all.
Do we have any recourse on that if something like this should happen again? Did we have any recourse?
Well, in that case, we didn't. In that case, there was a one-year warranty in the previous contract, the previous recoding contract, and I don't know if you can do better than that or not. One of the issues is that you end up with a dispute between the supplier of the coating. You know, the question is the coating defective or is the prep work defective? Mm-hmm. And you have two different entities involved and they basically just argue with each other.
Spence, yes?
Yeah, as an employee of GCSD several years ago, I actually went into these tanks and cleaned them out. And to see the inside of these tanks now gives me a sense of urgency as to what needs to take place. When I was in there cleaning out these tanks, working for the operations department, there you didn't see that rust on the top of the tank. These are big tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that's a lot of work, as Pete was saying. And to have that much rust in there and these big peeling off, we need to get this done as soon as possible. This is important stuff and it needs to be done soon or we're going to have a whole system in need of some major work. But this is high priority stuff in my eyes. Just having been absolutely inside there and to look up and see all that rust, it never used to be there. It was just like a pristine environment in there when we were getting the stuff off the floor. That's all we were getting is where it had settled down in there and getting the stuff off the floor. This is, we need to get this done ASAP, as soon as possible. And I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Spence. So I would like to make a motion at this time that we adopt the resolution 30-2020. Approving the Big Creek Second Garrett Clearwell Project and authorize the general manager to proceed with public bidding.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. And do we have any other comments or questions from the directors? Okay. Jennifer, any public comments?
No. Nope.
Okay, great.
Can I just make one correction to the resolution number? It's actually 29, not 30.
Ah. Yes.
Thank you, Rachel.
Easily changed. Do I need to read it again?
No, I'll make it part of when I repeat the motion.
Great.
Okay. So it has been moved by Director Kwiatkowski, seconded by Director Mora, to adopt Resolution 29-2020 approving the Big Creek Second Garrett Clearwell Project and authorize the General Manager to proceed with public bidding. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Bob, you're muted.
Yes.
Okay. And the motion carries 4 in favor with Director Armstrong absent.
Thank you. Now we will move on to item D, consideration of establishing the compensation level for the general manager for the 2021 fiscal year. And just a quick reminder, this is something that was postponed from the general manager whatever it's called. Yes.
Pretty much.
Now we've got a different plan that we'd like to enforce here. Mr. Campa.
Yeah, so this is something that actually, the fact that the compensation changes were not automatic or not further defined in this agreement was something that I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to at the time that we executed the agreement. Typically, I've had a couple of different ways to approach it. Either there's been a schedule of changes to compensation that occurred with a positive performance evaluation, so that it was spelled out for the public what that meant with good performance. Here's what the salary was and will be in the future. Another way that I've had these done is tied to the scale that's associated with the employees. For example, we have a step scale with 5% in between each step for merit. So with positive performance and meeting performance objectives, you can look forward to a 5% change in salary, and then the cost of living is applied to the entire salary scale on an annual basis to keep that basic salary up with the cost of living. Because if you provide just a merit and do not take into consideration the cost of living, eventually your scale gets out of whack. So there's two different components of it. So a couple of different options there is to consider tying it to the way that the employment agreement is with the employees as far as the 5% plus cost of living, or some other way that's relatively predictable, so we don't have to go through a lengthy debate each year. But it is subject to the compensation does need to be set based on the performance, and the evaluation was done last August.
So do we have any comments or questions from the directors? Okay, I would like to make the motion at this time to consider establishing the compensation level for the general manager for the 2021 fiscal year, that it be the same as the employees schedule, the cost of living raise, and a 5% step up, step up amount for performance. I think I stated that right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a second?
I don't see anybody's hands raised. Okay, nobody.
Did I, for lack of a second?
No, I thought it looked like Spence was talking. I'll second that.
Thank you, Nancy. Okay, do we have any additional comments from the directors? Yes, Spence.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead, Bob.
So I want to make the I'm fine, of course, with the COLA adjustment. And I think that it's reasonable to give increase based on performance. But I'm not sure that I want to have that become a automatic policy, because I think, you know, we need to, I don't want to be contentious about it, but I do think it's something that the board should probably review each year rather than set a blanket raise policy.
Spence, did you have any?
That was basically the only reason I kind of hesitated too, because I just thought it was, you know, we were going to vote on just the consideration of the compensation, you know, whatever. And so kind of having the hard, fast other numbers in there is the thing that kind of just threw me a little bit. But And I kind of agree. It's like, I don't know. I'm okay either way, I guess.
Well, I guess the wording is probably not correct. Because I don't think it would be an it would be in kind of like an unless the general manager does not, if his performance is not up to par or expected or should fall, then it wouldn't be an automatic. It's not really automatic. It's just we're keeping this manager on the same track as all the other managers with the, you know, with the, of course, every manager doesn't get an automatic, every employee doesn't get an automatic 5%. It's the evaluation of their performance throughout the year if they're going to step up to the next level, which would be a 5% increase. So with Pete's position, there is no step up to the next level. But he would definitely deserve the same rate increase or performance enhanced increase, if you want to call it that.
I think for maybe clarification purposes, I don't know if this was going to be something that would be added as like in a an amendment to the contract, but I think everything's based on the performance. So I think what the language, I think what I'm hearing is that for all intents and purposes, how the general manager increases in salary is to mirror that of other district employees, but it's still based off of an acceptable performance evaluation for the year. So based, because that's how staff is. If nobody automatically moves, the scale automatically changes and everybody will automatically get a COLA, but the actual advancement to the next step is done through the evaluation process. So, you know, during the annual evaluation, is where this decision to move the general manager's salary up would take place. It's just the terms of how that moves up would be based on what existing staff has in place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we would still do the performance evaluation and it would just set the increase amount. Which is something that wouldn't have to be negotiated every time.
Is the cost of living adjustment for the rest of the staff always 5%?
No, that's not. Cost of living is based off the Western State CPI or 3%, whichever is lowest. The percentage of step between the steps from A to B to C through a range is 5% difference.
Okay. That's kind of, again, kind of what threw me, you know,
yeah.
In my 30 plus years working, I don't think we ever got a 5% cost of living adjustment because cost of living just never went up.
Gone up that much. I wish we could get one. Yeah, I think it's 2.8 is the lowest and 3% is the highest for the cost of living.
Well, the 2.8 right now is what the last I checked was the Western State CPI average, which is what that came out to. So it's it's either 3%. So like, let's say for whatever reason it was, the average was 4%. The highest COLA staff could get would be 3%, but it can go, and then whatever the average is, as long as it's under 3%, that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And
Pete, can I also just add, I think you are worth every nickel, dime, and dollar that you are paid by a long, long, long shot. But I just, like I said, the way I kind of heard it was like with these hard, fast numbers attached to it that I figured we'd have Pete, somebody complaining about, you know, nobody here maybe, you know, but
yeah, I am really just giving options just for the sake of discussion, because it's it's nothing that is normally comfortable for board members to have a conversation about. It's not something that's appropriate to talk about in closed session because it is budgetary and so it needs to be publicly debated. I've just found that, you know, it's in some cases there are districts that don't limit the amount and they've driven salaries through the roof on districts to in many cases to an inappropriate level. And so the having a certain amount in there, and 5% in our industry is pretty normal in between the merit steps, you know, again, taking the cost of living off the table, but the in between the merit steps, it's pretty normal. But that is actually putting that 5% on there is actually a limit versus a gift, if you know what I mean. But I'm not negotiating for a bigger number by any means. It's just I'm trying to make it easy for predictability and everything else. And but if I'm certainly comfortable with doing it this way each year as well, you know, it would be nice to come out of the performance evaluation, assuming if all things remain equal going forward, that next year this is going to be included in the budget, even though it might be 6 months away or so, you know.
I think that's a reasonable request.
And then we put it for an action item with the budget, but we've all had a conversation about it in it, you know, as part of the just proposed package going forward contract amendment.
I want to just quickly add that I think if we've got everybody at the district on a 5% step acceptable performance evaluation program, I think the general manager should also qualify for that. And it would take any guesswork out of what percent, how do we figure out what he would be earning, or, you know, how do we evaluate, how you can evaluate performance, but how you evaluate dollar amount equal to his performance. And I think that 5% would be considered low, but I think that that's the rate for everyone else that works at the district. So it would take the guesswork out of the evaluation altogether. Any other comments? Yes, Bob.
Yeah. Going like, so the way that the merit works for the other for all the other employees as they move through the different levels of step, does that happen every year, or does it happen when some criterion is met?
So it's based off, it can happen annually. So at the beginning of like right now, we would set, do the evaluation, then we'd set goals and objectives for the next year period. And that's what they, so then when we get to this time where we're evaluating how, what the an employee's performance is, allows them to see whether they would advance to the next step or not by, based off of their, you know, meeting the goals and objectives that were set for them during their last performance evaluation. It doesn't, we've tried to tie it to, you know, annually with the fiscal year to make everything clean. We did leave the ability for, like, let's, in the event that, you know, we get somebody on who's either, you know, has experience and they start off, but they're performing like superbly, we can move, advance them a little bit earlier. But for the most part, it's all tied to what the goals and objectives were set for them to accomplish over the fiscal year.
So they're okay. So they're evaluated every year, and either advance or don't. I'm not real hung up on this, but one of the things that I'm concerned about, and I understand, Pete, that the 5% is not an unreasonable increment, but you know, this goes out. Your contract lasts for 4 more years, and you know, I probably won't be on the board that whole 4 years, and other, you know, there may be other changes as well. And I kind of am reluctant to embed something into the contract that we didn't actually put into the contract by sort of resolution.
Well, I want to add that his contract came upon us rather quickly, and that there should have been some kind of compensation clause in that contract.
It, well, there kind of is, it's extremely vague.
Yes.
What was your comment, Jennifer?
I just said that the, for, you know, what's the compensation of the general manager is set in his contract, except it's extremely vague. It's just, it will review and set level of compensation and benefits payable to the GM based on performance and establish new goals and objectives as appropriate. So I think one of the, you know, this position's a little bit, I was having a discussion earlier about the trying to get something in there for the GM or something for these, you know, the exempt contracts, because in the past, contract managers have always had, it's not out of practice, but they usually had a lot more lucrative benefits than the rest of staff. So like they didn't pay any portion of their PERS and so on and so forth. And I know this board, especially with Bob on, tried to kind of, because that caused a lot of dissension among staff. And so the general manager was supposed to lead as example and kind of mirror what the other, you know, just made sense of like, what are you applying to this position for these, you know, as guidelines for benefits and compensation. So I don't know. You know, and also you want to know what's to kind of be expected. So I don't know how we do that. We've kind of mirrored the GM with everything else as far as what employees get. So why this compensation would be any different, I don't know.
Well, it kind of bothers me that we have such a quiet panel of people here that aren't speaking up. Is there reasons why anybody would not want to agree to this? I mean, we're getting a deal already.
Well, I'll say it again. Maybe I'm not being clear. I'm perfectly fine with setting the compensation for 2021 with a 5% increase for, outstanding performance and plus a COLA on top of that.
Okay.
My only concern is I don't necessarily want to say that we're going to make that be fixed for the next 4 years or next 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of me too. It's like, again, I never worked in the government, and I realize that's different, but, you know, I also never worked anywhere where I just like knew for a fact I was going to be getting the same raise for the next, you know, for this long period. It's just the idea. I mean, Pete's wonderful. We know darn well he's going to continue to be absolutely fabulous. But let's say he takes a bump to the head and just all of a sudden, you know, starts just not doing the things that he's supposed to be doing. I don't like the idea that we would, like Bob just said, be committed to still doing something for 4 or 5 years. We can review it every year, like he said, which we should have probably been doing anyway, during his evaluation, set the amount, say, yep, everything's cool, move on, it'll go in the budget. That is my thoughts.
That works. Honestly, that works for me. I'll do a better job at the performance evaluation time to keep that ball rolling in that direction so that you know, so that we've pretty much resolved this. We just have to take action on it at this time each year before we can actually take action on it at the time the evaluation is done, except it's It's easier to do a check-in and just say, let's it's just kind of it, what's weird right now is that we're on a cycle of the fiscal year starting and then the evaluation process. It's like at some point we should align those a little bit better, or just not have the increase associated with the fiscal year in reality.
I think the evaluation should be on the anniversary of the employee, not necessarily on this employee. And it should be, that gives us a couple of months to get the evaluation done and then have it take effect at the beginning of the next fiscal year. Instead of in reverse, we have our fiscal year and we do the evaluation, you know, a month or two later, and then, you know.
For, I would think, I mean, I think that there's actually something to be said for having the evaluation happen after the fiscal year, because most of the department or most of the organizational goals and objectives are set within the fiscal year. So we can't really evaluate properly until we've reached the end of that time. I think, except for the fact we're currently kind of out of sequence on this, and, you know, a way around that is you do the evaluation, you decide on the compensation, and you make it, you know, what the hell, make it retroactive to the first of the fiscal year. I mean, there's ways of fixing that. But I do think the eval, you know, I think there's merit in having the evaluation for the general manager occur after the close of the fiscal year so that we can, you know, save what, because all of the goals and objectives are set based.
Yeah, I agree with that too, just because, like Bob just said, all the goals and objectives are set on a, on that time frame. So it would be kind of, everything would be kind of skewed funny.
We're late doing this. This particular topic that we're discussing right now, we should have been discussing last August, September, and, you know, taken action on it at the time. So there is an issue there. We're kind of in arrears a little bit on Pete, and we probably need to pay attention to that. Maybe we could backdate it. I don't know. I mean, this is a reasonable. I just think that, you know, setting this up. Yeah, I've already said my.
Well, you can always add to it. That's good. That's fine.
But then I start repeating myself, so I don't want to do that.
Well, you don't have to repeat yourself. You can just add the new stuff. okay. So
I don't understand your comment about a bunch of people being silent, because we all kind of input things.
Not everybody. Yes.
Spence. Well, the board has.
Okay. Okay.
If I may.
I can't imagine that Rachel would feel comfortable.
No, not Rachel. I'm thinking about the board.
The boss's, you know, compensation.
I think it specifically just had to do with people trying to work through what's being proposed, Janice. Like,
right.
So I think anybody's like debating whether or not Pete is deserving of a raise.
Right, no.
They're being, you know, they're trying to make sure that they don't do something that's going to be, you know, first of all, looked at negatively, like Nancy was saying, just automatically giving somebody, you know, a raise, just the logistics of it, which is understandable.
Sure. Spencer, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, we are discussing a pay increase as a step of 5% for satisfactory or outstanding performance. Are we going to limit ourselves to just a 5% step, as if we're going to tie the general manager into the same pay increases that the, all our staff members get? Can we put in there, you know, somebody who's super, really did a fantastic job in accordance with his or her evaluation? Could we increase that from a 5 to probably a 10% step increase? I mean, to hang a carrot on the end of the stick out there for that type of performance. What do people think about that?
So are you talking about all employees, or are you talking about the general manager position?
Well, I think if we're going to tie Pete to the general manager's position to pay increases as with as is done with all the staff members, mm-hmm. I think then we would do it all together. So everybody has the same opportunity to get that higher pay increase. Now, because
that's under their contract, isn't it?
Are the employees?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't have, well, you mean they're the MOU?
Yeah.
It's just, that's how it's set in there for, but management has like been left up with the discretion to, in the event, like I was saying earlier, if there's somebody who's just performing like really, really, really well and above, we have the option to move them to whatever step we feel appropriate. So let's say they're in, you know, they start in step A of something, we can move them up to step C. You know, we're not limited to where we can place somebody. I mean, it has to fall within the approved range, obviously. But in those exceptional circumstances and for retention purposes, management does have the ability to advance employees further than a 5%.
Okay.
So that provision is already there. So if that would also apply to the general manager for a step increase for him too, is that correct?
Well, Pete's not really on steps. We use steps because that's how the employees are set up. Pete is not, it would just be, you could set Pete, you could, you know, Pete's a contract employment. It's all negotiated. So you can annually decide, I mean, I don't know. I guess there maybe needs to be some parameters as far as establishing general manager potential pay increases. Because we have it with, you know, pretty much with staff, but the GM is not, the GM position is, you definitely have goals and objectives that are established, but as far as what measuring criteria to establish the appropriate percent pay increase isn't really there yet.
I just, you know, I'm going to have to, I agree with Nancy in saying that Pete is worth everything we pay for the general manager. And I don't know if 5% is adequate. I don't know. And I didn't know if we are limited to going more. Apparently not.
No, we are. We are limited. We are not limited. Yeah, we are not limited.
Okay, then we're not limited. Okay, I didn't know that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm finding all this out now. That's good. This is learning for me. So I just wanted to make sure of that because – you know, when Nancy and Janice and I came on and Bob and John, we had been, you know, struggling with what's going on with the board and well, not so much the board, but what's going on with the people and the staff, and all of that has calmed down so much and we're moving ahead so well, and it becomes such a leader in the whole county as far as special districts. Things have changed so dramatically. I don't know. Maybe we should consider something other than just a 5% step increase. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Of course, as has been stated earlier, we've got to consider the ramifications of what we do here to all the staff members that work at GCSD. So maybe not this particular evaluation, but in the next one. So I don't know. Do you guys get what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
But like for everything that Spence just said, is part of the reason I feel that we need to be cautious, because we finally don't have people critiquing every burp we make. And if we all of a sudden just start doing like some of the step, for lack of a better word, that is over and above what has typically been done or what is typical for the industry or for the, you know, the rest of the staff, I think we're inviting ourselves to be right back where we were a year ago.
Well, and I think maybe, I know performance evaluations for the most part are obviously not public information, but I don't know, as far as, you know, a performance report, I think a lot of the things that happen are, you know, you get like with the GM position specifically, because it's the most public and most high paid position. Maybe there's a, you know, something that we also implement of just the, like, you know, things as far as the grant revenue that comes in and all of the things that have been accomplished under the general manager that kind of associates the justice, because people will say, well, why did you, you know, how does this person deserve this? And this is a way that you can, we can really illustrate to the public just how much has been accomplished under the general manager, how much of a better position the district has gotten, has been into, how more solvent it is, things that will, you know, that people can see rather than just that don't follow us, don't follow our meetings, don't follow the grants, don't follow all this stuff. I don't know, there's something maybe we can put together as a, you know, and obviously Pete has to be comfortable with that. But I don't know, they're just food for thought.
Along those same lines, though, I think, because right now our budget is in a precarious position, and, you know, granted, we've got all this stuff coming in, but, like, you know, Ronnie does a great job as far as getting that information out. You know, we've applied for this, we're getting this, and now, so that does a lot to keep Pete with his little halo shining around his head, you know, for the community and stuff like that. But it's all of that is fairly new. You know what I mean? It's not like he's got this three or five year track record of, you know, just everything he does, it, you know, turns to gold, which it seems like is the case, especially lately. So, you know, I think we should just be a little more open to, you know, something kind of normal this year. And then the years after that, we can kind of start building on it, because I truly believe the district is going to continue to just build and thrive under him, because he does a great job. He's a fabulous leader.
Okay, so what are the...
I'm going to have to chime in and agree with everything that Nancy has said, and especially the part about building on the future, mm-hmm. because that's what this district needs, is the future. And that's what Pete works on every day of his, that he comes to work, every day that he's awake. He's looking at the future of the district. He's not worrying about what's going on now at Second Grody today. He's looking at what's going on at Second Grody in 2 years, or the water lines in Big Oak Flat in 3 years. That's what he's looking at. And Nancy, you're absolutely right, ma'am. Let's look at this for the next evaluation period and the evaluation period after that. So we have something to show, something to say, well, look at this, you know. He doesn't walk on water and part the Red Sea, but he did part Pine Mountain Lake and get across the Doggone Reservoir too. Okay, I'm just being facetious and joking now. I'm sorry, shouldn't have done that. But yes, build on the future and go from there.
Okay, but we can't forget that we did not do any kind of increase in his wages at the last performance. So we have to, you know, we can't just move on from here. We have to also take into account what has been happening for the last year and a half.
So maybe I know that we actually have an open motion, but if I were to be making a motion, I think at this point, what I would say is 5% plus COLA effective immediately. And then we should probably, you know, because I'd really like to see the evaluation sequence stay on the fiscal year, is set a date, say, like, we do the general, you know, the evaluation after the fiscal year is over. And then on September 1st, the GM's compensation is adjusted. And then this one time, that would be sort of prorated, because we just gave him last year's increase now. And then going forward, you'd do the evaluation and then have a point at which the compensation would change. That'd be, you know, because we're behind. I mean, Peter's been doing a really good job. And he's, you know, we're coming up, we've already passed his first year anniversary and we haven't done anything. So, you know, I don't want to say postpone that, want to do the first adjustment now, but I would like to maybe get his compensation change synchronized with the
Okay, that makes sense. That okay.
So I don't know if I'm following this or not. So whatever's voted on. Okay, we're gonna get the 5% COLA, or if that's what happens. Are we doing this retroactive? Are we going to make it effective not July 1? Are you wanting to go back because of this, or?
Actually, I'd want to make it effective. I don't know if we can be retroactive, but effective immediately, just to get that part taken care of. And then when we go to his next evaluation, which will not have been, this increase wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't be giving him a 5% increase and whatnot last September 1st, because he was only been on the job for 4 months at that point. Mm-hmm. So there would have been some prorata thing associated with it. So I think we can figure out the proration part of it, but I do think we should give, that the change should happen, the first 5% plus COLA should happen right now, because we're already, a month overdue from just his, when we signed the contract in the first place, half a month okay. Almost. And then after the next evaluation, then I would say, well, this has been since May 1st, June 15th to September 1st, whatever time it is, he gets that proportion of an additional increase. Mm-hmm. And then we go one more year, and then we have another year, and then we do an increase. I think. I mean, you understand what I'm trying. There's a way to make this work, I think, sensibly.
Yes. So I'm going to change the motion. Consideration of establishing the compensation level for the general manager for the 2021 fiscal year, comma, to be 5% plus COLA as of June 10th. 2020, and after his annual evaluation, we will consider any additional increase.
Second, Nancy, you seconded, so you have to agree to that.
I agree to that, and I reseconded it.
Thank you very much. Any comments from any other directors?
I appreciate all of the input.
It took us a minute.
Well, no, I mean, it's a very respectful situation here. It's reflective of the budgetary constraints and the needs and interests and public perception and all of it. It's all exactly what you guys are supposed to do, be protective, but at the same time be understanding and make sure we're going in the right direction. And so I'm good with the conversation. I very much appreciate it, and I like I said, I'll do better in the performance evaluation process of talking about what we should expect for the next fiscal year, and we can tie that with performance expectations and everything else. So it's a good process.
Having been part of this conversation today makes me proud to be associated with the three other board members that are here, and John, who I wish was here, makes me very proud to be associated with you four folks.
Can I clarify, and Jen, you might, I would assume you'll probably agree that it's going to be easiest to tie it to a pay cycle versus in the middle? Any changes in compensation?
Yeah, I mean, I would say make the change as soon as is, practical to keep things on the normal. I mean, when would you get your next, you get paid monthly or twice a week? Or
the new pay period started yesterday, right?
There was 4 hours. Excuse me, 4 hours of it was on Friday.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Rachel. Okay. So
we could start at this pay period, this current pay period.
Okay. Yeah. Which would have started on
last Friday.
Okay.
Okay. I have to ask, why are 4 hours of the pay period on Friday?
Because that's how we do, because we're on the nine.
Oh, yeah. We switched.
So we have to, yeah. So like it has to end halfway through the day and start on the other in order to not have the overtime.
That's right.
Okay. So that's
for those who get overtime.
Yeah. Not us.
Yeah.
Okay. Any public comments?
I don't see any. Okay.
Okay, Jennifer, you want to read it back and take a vote?
I'm going to attempt. Okay. So an amended motion was made by Director Kwiatkowski, and it was approved and seconded by Director Mora to establish the level of compensation for the general manager for fiscal year 2021 beginning June 5th with the new pay period, with a 5% increase plus the COLA as received by the other employees of the district. And then the consideration of another adjustment after the next annual general manager performance evaluation.
Perfect.
Let me just clarify really quickly, because I think that the merit will be effective on the 5th and the COLA will be effective July 1.
Ah, yes.
Just for clarification.
Okay.
Jennifer, does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Rachel, you got that for the minutes?
Yes. And that's just to make it consistent with everybody else. I don't need the COLA in advance of everybody else.
Okay. Got it. All right. Call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries with 4 in favor and with Director Armstrong absent.
Thanks, everybody. That was a touchy subject. Sorry if I went a little wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, sorry. No, Spencer, you were fine.
Everybody was.
But you know, I'll tell you, we've been trained well. I mean, all of us, and learned our positions, and it just makes me proud to be a member of this. These directors here, this board, it really does. The staff members, I just am glad to tell people I'm a director at GCSD.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago, if you'd have said that, you might have got a rock thrown at you. But right now, that's not the case. And I am. I'm proud to be a member of this organization. And I'm going to run again.
Hey.
You are too, Bob, right? Mr. Swan,
you're muted. There we go.
We'll see.
Oh.
He's a politician, that guy.
He's playing hard to get.
Yeah.
Where are we on this agenda?
We're on your agenda. So we are now going to adjourn.
I was just going to say, I'll move that we make an adjournment here, but we're going
to adjourn 12.
I get to just adjourn at 12:45 p.m. Thank you, everybody, for attending.